The Labor of Love is brought to you by the all-new, totally redesigned Hyundai Tucson. Can an SUV be your escape vehicle? You have no idea. The 2016 Tucson, the official pace car of living.
Hey, Panoply listener, looking for more podcasts for your playlist? Check out the Vulture TV podcast for great discussion about the latest TV shows, or check out Sex Lives for fascinating conversations about sex. You can find them on iTunes, Panoply.fm, or on your favorite podcasting app.
Welcome to The Labor of Love, a podcast about marriage, family, and making peace with the people we live with. I'm Lori Leibovich, editor of RealSimple.com. Sitting down for an annual performance review with your boss can be nerve-wracking and uncomfortable. But in matters of love, could regular reviews of your relationship be more satisfying and useful? According to a recent widely shared article in the Wall Street Journal, a growing number of marriage therapists are recommending that spouses complete formal marriage reviews. They find that frequent check-ins with partners can improve relationship satisfaction and foster intimacy. Joining me today to talk about how partners can help strengthen their relationships using performance reviews and why they might want to is Kaplan Hendricks, a relationship coach, psychologist, and co-author of more than 14 books with her husband, Gay. Also joining me today is Dr. Rebecca Chori, a professor of management at Frostburg State University in Maryland. Welcome to the show, Katie and Rebecca.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Katie, I want to start with you. You're a therapist. Can you explain exactly what a performance review between partners looks like?
Well, we don't call it a performance review. In our upcoming book, Conscious Loving Ever After, which was really designed for people who are at midlife and beyond, we found that if people have two regular conversations a week, one of which we call the stuff talk, the 10-minute stuff talk, and the other we call the 10-minute heart talk, they are ways to keep the business of your relationship in its own category so it doesn't spill over into the intimacy of your relationship. And if you have a regular review of what's going on at a feeling level, what's going on at an agreement level between you, what's something that you want to clear up, if you have a regular time to share that with each other, it really keeps your relationship alive and keeps you from throwing roadblocks into your relationship. One of the ways that we first really caught on to that was when one of our clients came and said the moment he knew his relationship was in trouble was when he came home after a trip and his wife greeted him at the door with, not with a hug, but with saying, "Oh, thank God you're home. The upstairs plumbing is broken."
And instead of, "I really missed you," or
"Yeah, well, I really
nice to see you,"
or "How was your trip?" And so what we found is that when people are regularly able to say, "Here's how we're doing. Here's how I'm doing. Here's how I think we're doing with the business of our relationship. And here's how we're doing with the intimacy of our relationship," it really can help keep you on track.
So what are some examples of subjects that might be covered at the business check-in and then at the heart check-in?
Well, the business check-in has a lot to do with who does what and when. You know, who's going to be picking up the kids at soccer? The agreement that you had last week about somebody getting the calling somebody to fix the fence. It's those kinds of regular things that are always going on in relationships that tend to really spill over it. And what we found is that they can all be handled in a 10-minute conversation a week. So the big discipline is for people to put those things on a list so that they, and that was a big discipline for me because I was just so tempted to try and get it all fixed right now when I was thinking of it. And
right.
Then just call a business meeting.
So literally, if you were going to try to implement this in your own home, and I'm talking just about the business review now, you and your partner would each keep a running list throughout the week of things that need to be discussed that have to do with the management of the household, the children, or what have you. And then you set aside 10 minutes every week and you go through each other's lists and make decisions about who's taking care of what.
Yep.
Is part of why this is successful because it doesn't let resentments fester?
Yeah, that's a very good point, Lori, that really the heartblood of a relationship at the business level is doing what you say you're going to do and not doing what you say you're not going to do. And this gives you a regular time to check in with your agreements. And what we found, too, is that people often find that there may be some hidden feelings of either sadness or anger or fear that have contributed to not keeping an agreement. And then that gets to get covered in, okay, what's going on between us as partners and as a couple in the heart talk?
Can you talk a little bit about that heart talk and what that might cover and how it can be approached?
Oh, sure. The heart talk, the very first thing that we recommend that people do is actually get present with each other, either sitting side by side or sitting and looking and breathing with each other for a moment, or touching each other, like touching each other's arm or leg, so that you get connected. And we give more directions about what we call presencing in our book, Conscious Loving Ever After, so people can implement that. Once you've gotten connected, then each person has a chance to share what they have been feeling. And it doesn't always have to be something that's wrong. They could be feeling a great deal of appreciation for each other and had just not really gotten a chance to give their full presence to share that with each other. So it's constructed so that you connect, you share, and then you connect again, so that it is really a great opportunity to deepen your intimacy. And it doesn't take very long, because that's one of the things we notice is people go, oh gosh, we've got to talk about our relationship now and what's going on. And this gives you a very efficient and a way to dive in that really works.
Do you find that these discussions, either with you and your husband or in couples who you've seen in practice, I imagine that there are times when these discussions, whether they're about business or heart matters, can become heated?
Yes.
And maybe even antagonistic. So if you are having one of them, and of course there's not a therapist in your living room who can mediate, what should you do if it gets really heated?
Well, one of the reasons that we structure this the way we do, where you really connect and you have a way of giving and receiving loving attention to each other, and you spend some time doing that, just acknowledging each other and being together, there's less of a likelihood that there's going to be an escalation or a big blow up, but that does happen. And in that, actually what we found works best is in that moment for people to drop the words out and to just use sound and gestures until they have recovered a sense of, okay, I'm me and I'm having a feeling right now, and that may or may not have anything to do with you. It shifts the conversation from an attack into a way that people can share and actually often play together. Because words, we found that people who are close in couples really know how to trigger each other. They can choose just the right word that'll get you. And if that is occurring, we found the best thing to do in that kind of emergency situation is to drop the words out and actually to go to sounds that are just vowels, like ah or ew, and play with those.
That sounds really silly. I'm sorry. I can't imagine.
It is, in fact, that is really the
key. That's the point.
It lets you know that, wait a minute, this is silly, and here you are, I recognize you, we can be partners again, rather than thinking of the other as an enemy all the time.
Okay, I'm going to turn things over to Rebecca for a minute. Rebecca, you're a professor of management. You are not a therapist. You do not counsel couples the way that Katie does. However, you have done a lot of research on performance reviews. Is that right?
Yes, on giving primarily negative feedback in the work context.
What do you think that couples can learn from what you've researched in the workplace? What are some things that, if I'm talking to my husband for one of what Katie's calling the business, check-ins, mm-hmm. And I'm also a manager in my job, and mm-hmm. I've never really thought to approach those two jobs in the same way, but maybe I should. What do you have in mind?
Well, there are some things to keep in mind that are similar and that are, then there are, of course, other things that are different. But I think in the workplace, when we have work relationships of various kinds, including our supervisor, manager, our boss, there's always a relationship there as well. Now, it's not the same type of relationship we have with our romantic partners, but there is a relationship. And, of course, those relationships also vary from one employee to another. But there's a relationship there, and we're all humans, and there are some similarities in how we can approach each other, how we can talk about the issues, and how we can voice concerns or points about which we're not pleased. One of the things that's similar is that everyone wants to be treated with respect, regardless of the context when someone is addressing us or especially talking about things that maybe we need to work on, we feel defensive. And so we don't want to feel that way. We want to feel that we're respected, that we're valued, that we're affirmed, that we're loved. Now, it's not the same type of love in the workplace, but still that basic need for acceptance and to be liked. And so that's similar. We don't want to attack the person at the core.
And what would you suggest, both of you, maybe Katie, you can go first, what is a way to approach these conversations that makes it less antagonistic or so that your partner doesn't feel like you're attacking their person?
What we really recommend is that people first express what they are feeling. You know, I feel sad or I felt angry when I saw that you had left your coffee grounds in the kitchen again after we had made an agreement that you would clean up after you, you know, made coffee. It was one of the things that Gay and I used to have arguments about early in our relationship. And the more that you can speak about what's going on for you, here's how this affects me, here's how I'm feeling, and here's what I would like. That combination really, I think, lets your partner know that you are affected by their behavior and that you're claiming your own feelings rather than saying, you know, you made me so mad again.
Or you're such a slob, or I have to do all the cleaning.
Which is a criticism. And when I can say the focus on the behavior rather than labeling or name calling, that makes a really big difference for people in feeling respected.
Rebecca, yes. Managers are often told when they do performance reviews that they should begin the review process with some compliments, with some mm-hmm. successes that they feel their employee is having so that the conversation gets off to a positive start rather than just railing in or rather than just focusing in on things that need work. Is that your
sure.
experience? Is that work best?
I think everyone wants to feel hear the compliments, wants to feel validated in their work. The other thing that it does get back to putting people at ease or a sense of safety that what they are going to be told, assuming it's negative, that there are also some positives. And so absolutely, it never hurts to start off with some positives.
We'll be back in just a bit with our guests, Rebecca and Katie, where we'll be talking about just how many concerns you should bring up in a performance review. First, a word from our sponsor, Hyundai. The Labor of Love is brought to you by the 2016 Hyundai Tucson. With striking design and must-have tech, the all-new Tucson is a much-needed wake-up call. A fearless choice, a stunning choice among a sea of sameness. It's an agent of change arriving with an important message. It's time to get out there and live. Can an SUV help you live in the moment? You have no idea. Introducing the redesigned Hyundai Tucson, the official pace car of living. So, both of you, one thing I know I've experienced personally in a business setting, and I've heard this from other people too, is that a performance review in a work context can sometimes feel a little bit like a lecture, whether or not it is negative, positive, a little bit of both. Sometimes employees feel like they're just being talked to and that it's not actually a time for give and take, which is what would be more effective. I imagine it would be more effective in a couple's conversation if there was more give and take as well. What are some ways that people can ensure that these important conversations have a flow to them and aren't just one person going bullet by bullet by bullet with their points.
Yeah, that's a great point. And also, people don't realize how much they talk. they may think, oh, I'm really leaving room for you, but they're completely monopolizing the conversation. We have actually suggested that people use props, that they use since we almost all now have timers on our smartphones, you could use a timer so that each person, there's a minute and then you switch back and forth so that you really share the time that way. Or if someone really wants to develop something, you could have a longer period of time, say, 4 minutes each, and then kind of a closing back and forth time. You could also have something that you hand back and forth, just like tossing a ball. We often recommend actually that people use a balloon because it creates a sense of lightness and playfulness. And if you get mad at your partner, the worst thing that can happen is that you bop them on the head with the balloon. And you can actually then get a sense of the rhythm of your conversation. Do you actually toss the balloon or the ball to the other person, or are you keeping it? And it gives people real-time information about the way they hold a conversation.
Rebecca, do you have any thoughts on that, on how you can make a performance review less like a lecture and more like a give and take?
It should be a conversation to allow the person to give their input, their perspective. The biggest thing with regard to when you get negative feedback, the thing that most influences how people respond, from what we found in our research, is how fair they think the feedback was, how fair they think the review was, how fair they think they were treated, the procedures that were used. The biggest one, going back to some of what we've already spoken about, is how fair do people think that they've been treated as a human? There's a certain level of dignity and respect that we all feel that we deserve. And to what extent was that addressed? And so letting someone talk, letting someone have a say in what's going on. And I don't want to necessarily say defend themselves, because that implies they're being attacked. But there are at least two sides to every story. So when someone is giving, when a boss is giving the feedback, he or she may not have all the information or may have an incorrect view of what's going on. And so inviting and allowing the receiver of that information to respond and to talk about it is important. It's important even if the assessment doesn't change as a result of the person's input or explanation, it still allows that person to feel heard.
A question that I think a lot of people might be asking themselves at this point in the conversation is, whereas in business, there's usually a time set aside, either quarterly or once a year, or twice a year, for managers to sit and have performance reviews with their employees. In modern partnerships, time is limited. We're all crazy. We all have a million distractions in our lives. And I'm wondering, how do you suggest that people schedule these? I'm feeling like, even as I'm thinking to myself, this is such a great idea, I'm thinking, when in the world would we have time to do this?
That's one of the reasons that we only make them 10 minutes, because we have found that even in our very, very busy lives, you can find 10 minutes. And some people thrive with having a regular scheduled time. For example, Tuesday evening, early evening, not late evening, but, Tuesday and Thursday evenings, 10 minutes right after dinner. Or some people really thrive on being able to say, I'd like a business meeting. I see some things piling up. And so when is good for you? And they both mutually schedule it. But the thing that really makes a difference is scheduling it, not just waiting for somebody to remember or saying, oh, we didn't do it this week, can we do it right now, when they're in the middle of something else. So scheduling out ahead of time, especially as you're starting, I think really makes a difference. And we really recommend that you have one of these a week. You have one stuff talk and one heart talk for just 10 minutes each, and you'd be amazed at how much you can cover in 10 minutes.
I guess my final question for you, Katie, is when is this technique not going to be effective for a couple? If a couple is in real crisis over some, bigger issues, is this going to help, or should they be looking for a therapist?
Well, I think any time that the couple feels stressed enough that they are not really giving and receiving a level of appreciation where they're both feeling that they're partners and allies for each other, it's always a good idea to look for the possibility of a coach or a therapist, an advocate who can support the both of you to remember to be allies again. And what we have found is that these meetings actually assist in clearing the deck so that you can take a look at what might be underneath, what might be driving a recurring agreement that gets broken. So a recurring agreement, you know, that you're going to be the one who organizes, taking out the trash for the trash pickup, and that gets forgotten 3 weeks in a row. There's something else going on. And we actually have an activity in our book called The Rule of Three that allows people to take a look at those deeper issues. We find that these two conversations, stuff talk and heart talk, really, like, they clear the air and allow you to see, is there something deeper that might be going on? And they really do remove resentments and trying to keep a hold of things in your head, trying to remember who said what and who was going to do what. Having these meetings, writing things down, actually makes things so much easier.
Rebecca, I have one final question for you. It's a little bit personal, but I'm wondering if you've ever applied your knowledge that you've gleaned as a management researcher to your personal relationships.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think one of the things that I believe Katie said earlier was about expressing appreciation for the partner. That is important in both contexts. And the things about, okay, remind your partner that you do still recognize their contributions, that you are still pleased with what they're doing, that you still love them. Those are things that work in romantic relationships as well as in the workplace. People like to feel appreciated. They like to feel that you notice them, and that you notice that they are still there, and that they still that they are recognized. They say with maintaining relationships that once you've got the relationship, you don't stop being nice and courting the other. And that's true. And that's the same at a workplace, that you need to keep up on letting your employees know that you appreciate them and you recognize what they're doing. And so, yes, there are a lot of similarities and a lot of crossovers. Of course, there are differences, but appreciating the people in our lives is not something that is context bound.
Katie Hendricks is the author of the upcoming book, Conscious Loving Ever After, and Rebecca Chory is a professor at Frostburg State University in Maryland. Thank you both so much for being on The Labor of Love today.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Laura. It was a real pleasure.
Thanks so much for joining me today on The Labor of Love. If you have comments about our show, or if you'd like to suggest a topic for us to cover in a future episode, please email us at tlolpodcast@gmail.com. I'd like to thank our producer, Tim Einenkel, and engineer, Zach Dinerstein. If you enjoyed the episode, please review and subscribe on iTunes, where you'll also find three more podcasts from Real Simple. You can subscribe to The Labor of Love at itunes.com/panoply or at panoply.fm.